The stats, the salt, the sanity, and every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. Got a packed show today. Lots of hockey. Lots of, we even got some 60 seconds of salt. So if you've been waiting on that, we got a new game we're going to play with Justin that's going to lead to gambling and feed his addiction. So we're going to help him in any way we can to make sure Justin, you're not going to win any money off of this, but he's at least going to have a good time with it. Like I always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. Bring in the guys real quick. The man with the plan, the stat man who's got a lot of calculating to do today, Russ Ivanek.
How's it going? I'm starting to hate hockey.
Yeah, it's getting there. I'm loving the Habs right now, but that might be the only thing I could say about it because nothing else is going right.
Yep. No, I had to break out the Quebec blue to remind Toronto and the rest of Canada that you don't have to root for Montreal just because of the last Canadian team. You don't have to. Colorado used to be there.
Yeah.
Do that.
You don't have to, but you're probably going to. And yeah, the man who's going to get salty about all this hockey, Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
What's happening? I'm here. What's up, buddy? I can promise you guys we're going to all last 8 rounds together today, and you won't boo us when we're done, like that disappointing fight with Mayweather and Paul. We will go 8 rounds, no colluding, no problems.
Well, you walked us right into that first topic today, buddy. This past weekend, Floyd Mayweather, arguably one of the greatest boxers of all time, decided to do, I'm not even going to call it a boxing match. I'm going to call it the first time you were legally allowed to hug people in public. That's what I'm going to call it, because that's all it really was. These two go in, and I get it confused. Was it Logan Paul or Jake Paul, one of the Paul brothers who has no business being
Logan
a boxer.
Paul, though.
Logan Paul, okay. No offense to Jake, but yeah, it was just an ugly, ugly, bad. I mean, I only watched the highlights, if you can call them highlights, of it. And it was a lot of a guy that's a foot bigger than Floyd Mayweather trying to land a shot. And when he didn't land a shot, grabbing onto Floyd Mayweather because he was going to fall over if he didn't. Mayweather got some shots in there. And to me, it was just one of those things where I don't understand it. You're one of the greatest of all time. You produce money. Like, your appearance just produces money for you, and you felt the need to do this. So before we talk about if you even want to call it a fight, I do want to ask both of you, I put it in the rundown, Russ, did Floyd Mayweather kind of just stain his argument for the GOAT by doing this? I mean, Muhammad Ali did some weird things in his time, but he never went on with a like sports commentator and said, let's go 10 rounds, and then just proceeded to look terrible.
Well, I guess it depends on what you perceive as Floyd Mayweather's legacy necessarily. If it's all sizzle outside the ring and absolutely boring inside the ring, but methodical, efficient, and dominant, an efficient defensive moneymaker, then that's exactly what we saw here. 8 of his last 10 actual fights went the full 12 rounds. Not a shock that this one went full 8 rounds, even though clearly he wasn't trying. He could have killed Logan Paul in round 1. We know this, but he's there for the show. And the show makes more money if it goes the full rounds, and he knows it. Here's the thing that gets me, and I want to say yes to answer your question. I want to say yes, it stains his legacy, because, dude, what are you even doing? You're printing money. I get it. But this guy, really, like, at least with McGregor, it was someone who fights for a living, right? But the thing that pulls it back for me is it isn't just that Floyd Mayweather's in on the joke. He's the one telling the joke. Mm-hmm. He gets it. He gets that this was just about money and this wasn't for real and everything. And Logan Paul's in on the joke. Floyd Mayweather's the one making everyone laugh telling it.
Jay?
Well, to continue on with Russ's sentence, Logan Paul is also a joke.
Because it's just a joke, yes.
There are two generations that are separated greatly that took in this sport. And if you knew who Jake Paul was, Logan Paul, I don't care which Paul it is, if you knew the Paul brother, before you even knew who Mayweather was, you're first of all probably like obsessed with TikTok and all the social media stuff. You don't even realize that Mayweather is a GOAT to begin with. So you're not stating anything that you don't even know. And if obviously you're on the other side, you know Mayweather, you know what he's done. If you watched him, and I think it was Pacquiao too, that was just a defensive strategic battle that had all kinds of hype, like in press, like it should, and it fell flat. So I'm not surprised. My only issue, well, first of all, to answer your question, it doesn't stain his legacy because what he did already was like, that's that. Like, this was not real. This is staged. This is no different than like wrestling. Like, this was fake. But if people are going to buy in to round two and throw more money on it, it's like going to a fireworks store and thinking you got the $150 explosive kit and it just fades. You gonna do that again? This was stupid. This was gimmicky. It could be my 60 seconds assault because it's so dumb. And people fell for it. But it's all the Jake Paul people that were like, oh, he's going to box. No, that's not boxing.
Well, but the fact that they're already talking about round two, and it's like you shouldn't be already promoting round two a minute after the fight's over, because that means you realize we have to start promoting this now or else it's just going to lose the fizzle altogether, which it should anyway. I mean, the Paul brothers have yet to fight anyone that's actually a fighter or, in fact, anyone that's the same size as them. Logan Paul was a foot taller than Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather is a 120-pound guy who, yeah, he doesn't knock people out. He wins by outboxing you. Logan Paul was looking for the put-down, and, yeah, he got a couple good shots on him. But, see, I see it as a little bit of a stain for that reason of you're a boxer. Anytime you step into a boxing ring, be it a charity event, a sparring session, whatever, this is your wheelhouse. If Wayne Gretzky steps on a pond, I don't expect him to, like, you know, he can goof around, but I don't expect him to look like hasn't fought or played hockey in 20 years. I don't expect, you know, Michael Jordan to go on a basketball court and let anyone make him look like a fool. You're Floyd Mayweather. For right now, until someone else comes along, you are the greatest fighter of our generation. Maybe not the greatest of all time. We have Mike Tyson. We have Muhammad Ali. We have other guys that have earned the right to call themselves that for what they did. Mayweather's right there with them. But if you step into a boxing ring, you don't look like that. Yes, you are 44 and Paul is 26. But at the same time, you can't preach to be who you are and let a guy who picked up the sport of boxing what seems like a month ago go eight rounds with you and you don't put him on his butt at least a couple times. That's how I feel about it.
I'm a little bit sure that Mayweather didn't knock him down because he knew if he did, it's over.
Yeah.
If he did it, he might kill him.
But see, and that's the same thing though. Like, if you guys were saying how, yes, this is better if it goes the distance and all that, that's fantastic. Let it go the full eight. But when we get to a minute and a half left to go in the eighth round, someone has to look at Mayweather. No, it has to be like Rocky where they say switch. And all of a sudden he just starts showing you, oh, by the way, this is why I'm so good, because I'm going to hit you 57 times and you're not going to touch me once. But that didn't happen. And I mean, I'm going to give you rough numbers here because I only remember some of them. But you look at the percentages here. Logan Paul landed 13% of his punches.
Thank
it was something
you.
Like
yes.
It was something like, I believe it was like 27 of 200 or something like that.
28 of 217.
Okay.
Jesus. 217 punches.
Well, he threw 56 of them in that third round, like flailing thing he did there.
But in comparison, I think Mayweather landed something like 37 to like 43 or something like that.
43 of 107.
Okay. Yeah. So, like, that's what I'm saying. Mayweather at least proved, like, I'm still tactical and can do this right. You literally punched 100 times more than I did and didn't even come close to even. If anything, I would have been acceptable if it was, like, 47 of 207 I can live with. But you barely landed 10% of your punches, my friend. That's not good. So it's just that thing of it almost kind of goes back to like Russ and I had a very extensive debate the other day on a text thread. We'll get into that another day because there's just too much to talk about, but it almost goes back to my old school mentality. And like I said, if an all-time great, and you want to claim to be an all-time great, if you're going to step back into your arena for any reason, you have to I get you can't be the exact same person, but you have to show why you're that person. And letting a YouTube star go eight rounds with you and you don't once let him, you know, feel his head go off the mat, that's just not acceptable to me.
It's the same thing. Like if Michael Jordan does his documentary, but like, he just like sits back and says that like he was cocky as shit in his show. If he wasn't cocky as shit, that would be weird. It's the same thing. Like you have to own what you own at all times. It's kind of what has made you your career. So does anyone know how much this thing cost? Was it like, hopefully like $30?
Oh, I don't know the actual pay-per-view. I would never have paid for it. Yeah. I just watched the recap of it, but it was, again, it was just bad, which moves me on to the fact that this is kind of showing me where we're headed in the way of sports. Apparently a strong Twitter account earns you the right to be a pay-per-view fighter now. And I don't understand that because growing up, I remember watching these like previews for these fights, and these guys are in a gym for 10 years straight, just building themselves into this. And nowadays, all you got to do is just have enough followers who are stupid enough to give you $20 to watch you fight someone. And then, oh, by the way, you got to rig it so that it actually doesn't hurt you. If Logan Paul gets knocked out in the first round, people are never going to watch him fight again. But because he was able to work it where Mayweather agreed to let him go the distance, it's reached the point now where correct me if I'm wrong, Russ, I don't really want rigged games. Like I want a genuine see who's better kind of thing. Like I don't want to know who's going to win before it's going to happen because you've agreed on it previously.
Well, I take it this way. Sports is, and everyone involved in there are becoming more and more aware that it isn't an athletic competition. It is an athletic entertainment competition. And you watch a show, you know the good guys are going to win at the end, right? You know something's going to happen. We knew Jon Snow wasn't going to actually die, right? It's kind of the same thing. it's here. It's because it's entertaining. TikTok and YouTube stars are doing these things because people in general find it entertaining. They'll even if it's just out of some sick, morbid curiosity of, hey, is he going to get his teeth kicked in? People are watching. And that's more and more what sports is becoming aware. Like it started with brands, right? Like this is my brand and this is who I am, and personalized logos, which I like personalized logos. I'm not trying to shit on them. I'm just saying that's the way we're going. This is the trajectory. We're going to get more stuff like this. I mean, if the XFL stayed around, you were going to know who was going to win a lot of those games. I promise you some of that would have been scripted.
Yeah. Which, if I'm stepping into that world, I'm okay with it. But game seven of an NBA Finals or an NHL playoff game, I don't really want to know that, oh, so here's what's going to happen. Montreal, you're going to take the early lead, but late in the game, we're going to let so-and-so come back with a two-goal third period to just get over that hump. No. You have to score because you're good enough to score, not because all of a sudden the goalie's going to decide to jump left when he should have jumped right.
Counterpoint, how else do you explain that Montreal is moving on? I'm so angry about it.
Don't ever talk back to me like that again, Russ. Ever.
I don't have good things to explain about the Habs either. So this podcast is over. Thank you all for watching for 12 minutes. Yeah,
this is Armchair Sports Talk. Look, it was a weird thing that unfortunately I think we're going to see repeated over the next couple months. They're going to try to build this up. I do know that Jake Paul does have a fight with an MMA fighter. I'm curious to see how that one goes because I just can't see a guy who's actually legitimately still in the UFC in some form or boxing in some form win. We might finally get to see one of these guys, you know, eat the mat, but who knows? It's just not the sports I'm here for. And it's sad to see a guy who 2 years ago was legitimately fighting all of a sudden just be relegated to having to do these fixed charity event things to make it seem like he's still a relevant boxer in this world. Oh yeah. I mean, the money's 100%.
I can't cash only.
Look, yeah. At the end of the day, the payday that they got for this, I can't fault either of them for that money being a thing, but call me crazy. Call me weird. You guys can agree to take the money. That money's going to be great, but 100 years from now, we're still going to be talking about Muhammad Ali as the greatest boxer of all time. Not because he made millions on millions on millions, because he was just so good. Nobody could beat him. Floyd Mayweather seems to care more about now, not how everybody's going to remember him 50 years from now.
You're crazy and weird.
Thanks.
Correct. He does not care about his legacy. He cares about his bank account. And frankly, in 100 years, he won't be around for his legacy anyways.
It's true. So. It's fair. Speaking of crazy and weird, this past week, John Rahm should have won the Memorial. He should have won the Memorial. John Rahm exited the third round with a 6-stroke lead and then was told he tested positive for COVID and would be forced to withdraw from the tournament. Now, look, I'm gonna preface this as best I can while holding back the rage I have for the fact that I bet on John Rahm. I understand the reasoning. I understand why they had to do it. It's the right thing to have to do. We're going to get into the fact that I think there was probably some alternate ways they could have done this. But at the end of the day, you can't do it for one and not do it for everyone. You'd have to talk to every single one of these guys that was forced to withdraw or avoid playing in a tournament over the last year because of a COVID test. So I get that. That being said, Justin, I think you can agree with me on this. We don't get to see runaway tournament victories that often anymore. 9 times out of 10, it comes down to the last group on the 18th hole or a playoff. So to see a guy, and don't get me wrong, Rahm could have folded like a lawn chair in the fourth round. We don't know what would have happened, but he was 6 strokes up and playing some really good golf. So to take it away from him in that way just irks me a bit.
It irks a lot of people, and I'm in that camp with you as well. I mean, he had 5 birdies and a hole in one on Saturday on top of it. Like, that's what got him that lead. But like I had money on it too, so that sucked. But at the same time, like, I feel like it was preventable. And we're not gonna get into, you know, how you prevent infectious disease. But the thing is that it does suck. And no matter which way you chop it up or you come up with this plan or that plan, it's one of those things that you just have to eat the pain. You kind of have to just go, well, that effing blows. And it did. It did for people who bet. It did people who love the sport. He was going to go off. He had a monster of a day. Like Cantlay, who was right behind him on Saturday, ended up winning it on Sunday anyways.
In a playoff, yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those things that suck. And when you try to dissect what the best alternative could have been, the best alternative was something that he could have controlled before. And that's what I can't like be like, oh, they need to change all these rules. No.
I completely understand.
It sucks.
Look, to give you the background story of it, he was told on, I believe, Sunday night or Monday morning that he was in contact, which, by the way, Justin, what the hell just happened? We'll get to that in a minute. He was told during the week that he had come in contact with someone who had tested positive. So he was in contact tracing. He had two options: withdraw or be tested daily. And if he tested positive, withdrawal was the option. He elected to having negative and having no symptoms. He elected to play. Was tested every day, and then Friday night or Saturday morning test, whichever one they did, came back positive. He was given the news and was forced to withdraw. Now, because I'm not saying any of us don't take this seriously, we're not strict about it. All three of us went through the last year, knock on wood, no COVID, been very safe. That being said, I think Russ would be the person who will bend the lease. So I'm going to hand over the PG commissioner for just a moment to him. And I am going to propose something to you. And I want you to think it through as logically as you can, but I also want you to give me the argument as to why it doesn't work. John Rahm tested positive. John Rahm has a 6-shot lead. So it's really on him to not fold. Why couldn't John Rahm tee off at 6 o'clock in the morning by himself with a mask and play his final 18?
Because why should he get special treatment? Is the simple answer to it. I mean, I think Justin hit it on it, or no, you hit it on it earlier, actually, on how you would have to go to everyone else that has to do that. If that was your plan ahead of time, sure. If you set it up and everyone that was in this case does it, cool. You cannot make a special case just because someone else was irresponsible. If you're mad about John Rahm, you should be mad. First off, you should be mad at John Rahm. The PGA set it up. He's in contact tracing. The only reason he's being tested without symptoms is because he's unvaccinated. those are the PGA rules. If he was vaccinated and not showing symptoms, they don't test him. Can't have a positive test without having to test. He's hurting his own earning potential by doing this. It's massively stupid to me why he would do that. I not even getting into the whole, like, hey, it's my body, my choice thing in a global pandemic. You're hurting your own earning potential. You're hurting nobody but you. So you can't then expect special treatment for it.
I'm with you. I completely agree. Look, I'm not trying to say, like, start an argument to try to worm my way out of this. I completely understand it. At the end of the day, you tested positive. It's not on anyone else because you tested positive. You were in contact with someone who, and to the best of my knowledge, from what I've heard, he remained asymptomatic the whole time. So, I mean, I wish the best for him, but at the same time, yeah, you brought COVID to a PGA Tour event. So now we're going to have this weird moment. So Russ pointed out, I pointed out, and I think Jay would agree, you can't do it for him and not do it for everyone. But that being said, where do you two fall on if the PGA Tour was to come out this coming Monday? Because if I'm not mistaken, next week is the U.S. Open. If they come out and they had said, look, it's been a couple months, we are now going to try to introduce the, if you test positive, this exact scenario. You will tee off first thing in the morning by yourself, play your 18, and then you will be asked to quarantine when you are not on the golf course.
As long as the people that are working there also are fully aware and, I don't want to say volunteer, but accept the risks in doing that, because you're not just putting yourself at risk. That's the problem. But yeah, doing it ahead of time, much better idea. And it's a whole lot better of an idea of what they have planned for July, which is stopping testing altogether. So yes, I like that idea better.
Okay.
I think either that or alternatively, if you test positive, you can go make your money by fighting Jake or Logan Paul. And then everyone gets their payday. Like, just go fight a Paul brother then.
They just have them on standby. It's, you have to go three rounds immediately.
I also like your plan. I just want to see the Paul brothers fight and lose.
I just want to see them fight each other. Let them just fight each other.
On a golf course.
On a golf course. Yeah, that's good.
While Phil Mickelson just drives bombs at them.
Yes.
No, Phil Mickelson will just stand behind the, like, where the camera can see him at all times with the Wanamaker, just, you know, just smiling. Or that, yeah, that can be his. He'll be the ring person just walking around with his trophy. If they do it and they, Rush, you kind of hinted at the point, or you made the point I wanted to make, was that if everyone outside of the players, the rules officials, the volunteers, which that's the thing, if you're the first tee time, you can kind of tell everyone, all right, look, we're not going to have galleries for this person. You'll have to wait. You can't really follow them. So there shouldn't be too much in the way of, other than a spotter or two that follows them. And you just have to, you know, everything has to be sterilized. The flags have to all be clean, like taken care of after every hole. Someone comes in, sterilizes, or even switches out the flag. Just switch it out for another one.
Bad idea.
Something like that. But if everybody's accepting of it, and this player understands, look, you're going to play golf, you're going to have a mask on anytime you get anywhere near anyone else. You're going to play your 18, and then, yeah, you're going to go sit in your hotel room until, if you make the cut, or if you, you know, and then if you win, it's going to probably likely be a, you know, virtual acceptance. You're going to find out you won from your hotel room, and we'll get you the trophy. It's going to be a weird scenario, but.
Whole thing's weird.
Whole thing's weird, absolutely. And so, I like it for that, and I like it for, you have to do it at the start of a week. It can't just be something you introduce in the middle of a tournament to be like, well, this guy was going to win. Are we really going to rob him of the win? Because, I mean, if you think about it, this is how these guys make their money. And you said it, Rush, you're hurting your money. You're earning by doing this. But these guys are, for better or worse, they're gamblers. They put it on the line, and the only way they get paid is if they make the cut. So it's kind of that thing of, it's a week without pay. I wouldn't want to give up a week without pay, but then again, I also wouldn't be willing to bring COVID into the area where I work, because that's going to result in a lot longer weeks without pay.
Uh-huh. That's a very good point.
I need a point of clarification. If athletes are gamblers, does that also mean that gamblers are athletes? Because then I would like to be an athlete.
No.
Damn it.
No, I'm not talking about athletes. I'm not talking about athletes. I'm talking about golfers are gamblers.
So I golf. so I'm an athlete.
No, you golf, so you're a gambler.
Dude, I would not use the word golfer and you in the same sentence. You're a putter. Occasional chipper.
But that means he gets close enough to putt, which, hey.
That's like two-thirds of the game.
Yeah. Just got to figure out the other two-thirds, and we're good to go. Now, Justin's always fun to golf with. He's a good time. Yeah, see, you did math there. Good job. That was good. I'm glad you did that.
Fractions.
Look, it's a weird situation. As someone, and Jay, you were with me, as someone who gambled, big ups to Barstool. They paid out the best. I swear to God, dude, what are you doing with your water bottle?
We're doing a podcast. So what are you talking about?
This guy.
We can see you. I don't think you realize that. Like, you're not on a hidden screen. We can see you.
I think you were in the middle of a great sentence. I want to hear it.
Moving on. This past week, the Atlanta Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones, well, he left Atlanta, made his way over to Tennessee, and is now a member of the Tennessee Titans. And I'm going to be the first one to say it. I don't think it's too much of a stretch, but I'm going to be the first one to say it anyway. The Tennessee Titans now have, in my opinion, the best offense in the league on paper. Derrick Henry doesn't hurt to have. Julio Jones, AJ Brown, and Ryan Tannehill's just got to make sure he gets the ball close to one of the three, and it's more than likely going to be a first down.
We're going to fight you. We're going to fight you right now, aren't we, Russ? Okay.
That's why I'm here.
I want it to be. I'll preface it with that. Want it to be. I want to just play me and Julio down by the schoolyard on repeat on Sundays and just love watching this team. However, this is a sports car with a smart car engine. Ryan Tannehill's okay, which is a far improvement over what we would have said about him 2 years ago. But now that OC that he came with and suddenly had a peak, just an absolute spike in completion percentage, quarterback rating, yards per completion, pretty much all of his metrics with Tennessee, he set career highs, and they're significantly above his averages from the other years. Now Arthur Smith's gone, is this a Kyle Shanahan type of thing that he leaves and the offense just absolutely craters? Maybe not, right? Maybe not. Let's say that they've got enough of a plan that they can manage it. You still have, for all of the talent that Derrick Henry has, dude had 378 carries last year, and the curse of 300 is a thing.
Yeah.
He avoided it the year prior with 303 carries, right, and had an even better year, but he did 378. Something's coming for him. Now we have an extended season. I don't know that he makes it all the way through, and that's going to hurt the potential of this offense. LaDainian Tomlinson's the only other running back other than Derrick Henry since like the year 2000 to lead the league in rushing yards in back-to-back seasons. Adrian Peterson never did it, right? Yeah. Nobody but LT in the last 20 years and Derrick Henry. Can he do it for a third year? Does he have to for this to be the top offense? They'll be good. But with that quarterback, I don't know that they can be the best.
I just want to preface two things here. One, I think the addition of Julio diminishes, not a ton, but diminishes the amount of carries that he has to see.
Good. Should.
That's it should. No, it absolutely success. Should. That's what I would like to preface. It's just weird to say. Usually you're saying the more carries, the better for most teams, because it means you're establishing a solid run game. In this case, we're trying to diminish a little bit. But to your comment about the whole OC thing, I personally think that Vrabel seems to be a smart guy. He seems to understand what works. Yeah, he's a very good coach. There's a template already laid out there. Now, whether the verbiage is the same and the plays are the exact same, I very highly doubt. But there is a template that is laid out there. You have a winning running back. You have a quarterback who, if you don't ask him to have to fully take over, if you ask him to just stay within himself and be a game manager, there's nothing wrong with being a game manager in the NFL. We know some players over the years that have won Super Bowls being a game manager. I defy anyone to tell me that Peyton Manning could ever absolutely just take over a game. No, but he could manage the game in his way to be favorable. Athletically, he was never going to take over a game.
Athletically, no. He might throw some dimes in there enough.
But he was always going to manage the game in his direction. Fair to say.
If we take away all the negative connotation of what a game manager is usually called,
Okay.
Then yes, he was the ideal game manager.
I'm taking it more. I'm not even trying to put it in a negative connotation. I'm just saying there are athletically gifted guys, Lamar mm-hmm. Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, insert name as you choose, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, who they are legitimately athletically gifted enough to take over a game. You want me to go get that first down? I'll go get that first down. You want me to, you know, heave an 80-yard pass that's going to land literally on the perfect spot of the hand? Done. I can do that. Then there are guys who are game managers. My favorite quarterback of all time, Tom Brady, is a game manager. He is never athletically going to take a game over. Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, these guys were game managers for the fact that they were never going to athletically take it over, but they were able to keep that game how they wanted it. They ran everything that fit them perfectly. They never put themselves in a bad situation. That's what Tannehill needs to be able to do. He knows what he can do. He knows what he can't do. He needs to put that game in a perfect spot for him, and the OC they get has to understand that. You're giving the ball to Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry will likely get 270 carries this year. And that might be the basement. It's probably going to be more, but that might be the basement. But now you have Julio Jones to go with Brown. So you have a duo of receivers that it's not like one guy getting targeted and the other one's just kind of over there to fill a spot because we have to have 11 people on the field. These are two legitimate wide receivers, Jay. So I think Julio being there takes a lot off of Derrick Henry, but I also think it really gives Tannehill the ability to feel a little more comfortable back there that he does, like that if his first option's not available, he has somewhere else to go with that ball.
Go ahead, Russ.
I just wanted to give you a number before you ran off to back Eric's point up. Ryan Tannehill, very best bad throw percentage in the NFL last year. Middle of the pack on target, but that just means he doesn't make bad decisions and he gives his wide receivers a chance. Yep. Now he has a better wide receiver to give a chance to.
And it reminds me, like, the first thing I thought about when I was looking at this roster, because, like, on paper, we want to judge if they're the best offense, right? And the first thing it reminded me of, Kirk Cousins, Delvin Cook, Diggs, Thielen. It's the same mentality of a lesser-than-average quarterback surrounded by great talent. And Minnesota tried to do that. I think Tennessee's better. I don't think they can do what they're trying to do there. I think it does help Derrick Henry have less of the load to carry, literally. I think that's all great for their team. I think there's a better team on paper than them, and that would be the Cleveland Browns, which is also probably the first thing that no one has said. First, going with what Eric said, what I'm saying now, I could say that the Browns are a better team on paper just based on they have a younger quarterback who's also probably not as elite as Tannehill is. And first of all, if you put Ryan Tannehill in a lineup in front of me, I could not tell you which one was Ryan Tannehill. So I know how he plays football. I have no idea what his face looks like, and I'm blanking on that right now. Just like I feel like they're going to blank on being the best offense. I don't know if that's the guy. They've got great pieces now, and maybe there's another guy they can get for the job. But I'll take the Brownies.
So there you go.
I could not tell you that's Ryan Tannehill.
Generic white quarterback, though.
I still don't know what he looks like.
40% of the quarterbacks in the league look almost exactly like him.
I won't look. When I say that, I'm not trying to say that it's Tennessee and then everybody else is so far behind. It's not an argument. You could still make the case that as long as they're on the field together, Kansas City has the best offense in the league. You could still make the case that if everything gets firing the way it is, Lord help me for saying this, I will never forgive myself. The Dallas Cowboys have a legitimate shot of being the best offense in the league. It hurts to say. I think very quietly underrated, and I'm excited to see what it looks like this year. I think Justin Herbert and the Chargers could have a very tough to beat offense. The Browns, look, I'm a Baker guy. My wife will probably marry him one day and leave me, but for now I'll hold on to her. That's a heck of a game. I've said a bunch of times that you take Derrick Henry out of this league, you can make a very strong case that Nick Chubb is back one in this league for what he can do on the football field. So I like them, but as I see it, if everything is done the way it's supposed to be doing, and Tennessee appears to be building this team up to every year, they seem to be right there in the playoffs. They just run a little short. Why is that? Because Derrick Henry reaches his gas point and you don't have enough offensive weapons to make that pass game believable. Now you at least have a great one. You have the number two receiver in the league by most people's counts. DeAndre Hopkins, then Julio Jones. Switch him as you like. But you have legitimately a top three receiver in this league now on top of the best back in the league. Any quarterback should be able to do this. It just so helps that you have a quarterback who, like Rush just said, does not make bad decisions very often. That should work in their favor. And, oh, by the way, I'm not trying to take anything away from Brown. Brown is one heck of a wide receiver.
Good.
And on most teams, he's a one. Unfortunately, right now, buddy, you got downgraded to 1B. I'll be nice. You got downgraded to 1B because 1A is here.
Hey, Julio's wearing number two. I'm just saying.
I was going to add, that was my follow-up. Your guys' thoughts on this. Pitts has said he's wearing eight in Atlanta. Julio's wearing two. This new face, if we're going to see college football numbers in the NFL now, I mean, where do you, like, it's weird to say a receiver's not going to either be in a 10 to 19 or 88 jersey, but, I mean, Russ, where do you fall on this? How do you feel about this?
Completely fine with it.
Okay.
If anything, I'm excited to see. Look, it'll lose its fun, like, after week five. Probably because, you know, the novelty of it will wear off. But I'm going to check out some games that I probably wouldn't watch otherwise the first couple weeks just to see it.
I think I was just too ignorant to realize that there was some kind of unwritten rule about jersey numbers.
So not unwritten. It was very written.
It was
written down that they precluded certain people to certain numbers.
Numbers were slotted by position. Yep.
Oh but my then, God.
But then Devin Hester is a cornerback on the roster wearing 23 and then plays wide receiver for the Bears. There's been ways around this for a while.
No.
I hate that there was a rule to begin with that you have to wear this when you put a big man on O-line with the number two on it. I'd love to see it. Just a big dude rocking two.
The big confusion years ago was when the Patriots won their first couple Super Bowls, they were very hurt in position. So Mike Vrabel, who was a linebacker wearing 50, played tight end in some situations, caught a touchdown in a Super Bowl. And then Deion Branch, who happened to have some corner experience, was a starting corner in a playoff game for them because they were so depleted at a corner that he needed to play for them in some situations. And so you have a corner wearing the 80s and you have a tight end wearing 50. So it's just one of those things where making it any number you want. Now these guys can line up wherever they want. Not that they can anyway, but it's just, it'll fit a little bit better. It will be weird though, week one, to see a tight end or a wide receiver wearing a single digit number, not something you see unless you're in college or high school. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited for it. And I'm excited to see this Tennessee team. If they can even remotely patch up that defense just a little bit, this is a team that can be very, very tough to beat. I had them making it to the Super Bowl last year. So adding Julio Jones does not do much to hurt that case for this year. It really doesn't. We are very much circling 60 seconds assault. But before we do, I want to just spark the juices a little bit. I just want to push it a little bit further. I'm going to ask this as a question, and then I'll give my argument after you guys respond. Jay, for you, do suspensions and punishments in the NHL in the playoffs just not add up as they would if it was a regular season?
You're trying to get my goat here. You're trying to get me going on this topic.
Yeah. Are you ready? It's at that time.
Yeah, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen. Oh, that's not what we wanted. Ladies and gentlemen, 60 seconds.
Wait. What the fuck is that?
Spoilers, damn it.
Yeah, we'll get to that a little later on. They all say salt on them. It's very confusing. Ladies and gentlemen, 60 seconds of salt with Justin Marcus.
I have a legitimate issue with the NHL amongst a lot of people. Russ is very mad about the show and tell that just happened. Butch Cassidy, very politely.
And the Sundance Kid?
Is his name Butch Cassidy?
Bruce.
Oh, damn it. Bruce. Ah, Adam Fox, whatever. Bruce Cassidy very appropriately described how he felt. He did not do what Tortorella did probably 4 or 5 months prior to this, and actually rip into the officials, but he gets fined like $20,000 plus for just speaking his mind, which he was right about. And the officials have done a wonderful job officiating the NHL playoffs. But the fact that a coach is going to get fined for something, for just speaking his mind, I think is absolutely, like, the NHL needs to do away with it. It's really dumb. Like, Mark Scheifele can have a 15-minute press conference about defending his position after being suspended and sitting there and trying to say, well, I was going to the post. I was doing my thing. Like, he's talking ill about a call that a ref made, but he already got suspended, so he's cool. Even the Habs guy said that when Scheifele comes back, we're going to make his life miserable. Like, if the NHL is so worried about optics, they're doing it all the wrong way. And it pisses me off that a coach should be able to say this was officiated wrong, because these guys aren't robots. They're wrong sometimes. So I think it's dumb. And he did it very nicely. He did it very respectfully. He said, I know these guys. I know these referees. They sucked today. They needed to be better. I know them. They're great people. If we can't do that, then it's just I've lost all point of press conferences. It's already coach speak. It's already player speak. It's in a league that, you know, it's the same 30 white dudes that are 6 years old getting coaching jobs. Like, there's so much wrong with the NHL on the surface that it really is starting to piss me off. And I just want to watch hockey from period one to the goal horn and be done, because everything afterwards is just nonsense. So, and we're going to find out how dead I am later. So stay tuned for that.
You're apparently so dead that you thought Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was behind the bench for Boston.
I was ready just to go, and Butch came. It just, Bruce.
I'm Butch. So happy with that. to add on to Justin's point, the $25,000 fine is more than collectively the last five player fines that have been put out by the league for hurting players, for intent to injure, and in some cases, actual injury. We think, apparently, the NHL thinks, it is more, they need to be more punitive for hurting a ref's feelings than for physically hurting a player, which is mind-boggling to me. I get that it's the company line, and we don't criticize ourselves in public. Take care of it behind closed doors. Why? Again, you're in the entertainment industry, and if someone messed up, we know everyone is. Check out Twitter, not for too long for your own mental sake, but check out Twitter. Everybody knows, right? You're not telling us anything new. You're telling the truth. You want players to be authentic. You want coaches to be authentic. Let them be. What a crazy idea.
And the last thing I have, which I wanted to say too, was raise your hand if you went to work today and complained about a coworker or an employee or the owner of a company. Like, you complain about people you work for or with all the time, but apparently we can't do it in sports because it's past that.
To be fair, I don't call a press conference for it. I tried. No one showed up. Probably because I scheduled it in the parking lot of a landscaping company, but whatever.
I like that. I'll come to that press conference for you, buddy.
Different strokes for different folks. I think it's a weird day where being able to express your opinion of how a game was called or officiated is against the rules or like you said, finable and all that. I heard a great story the other day on a podcast. JJ Redick was talking about how when he played in Orlando in a playoff game that, it just thought the refs were doing a terrible job. They just were not calling anything the right way. And like, don't get me wrong, he did it wrong. But after the final foul for him, or he had one more, but his coach sends him to the bench and he walked right up to the ref, put his arm around him and said, hey, I think ref's name was Jack. He goes, hey, Jack, I just wanted to say, fuck you guys. And then he walked to the bench. And as he's walking the bench, he goes, okay, I'm going to get tossed out. And he did get tossed out. But later on that day, later on that night, he saw the ref, and the ref said, look, I totally agree with you, but I could not throw you out.
Right.
So it's that thing of do it the right way. Let these people have their say, and it doesn't need to be punishable. You can talk about it later, but the fact that, you know, this coach had an opinion and he's not allowed to express it without a monetary fine does not make sense to me. And again, this is why I'm asking this question to you two. You are hockey guys over me, hands down. There's no argument to be had there, but the last couple months weeks of hockey, we've seen some hits that, like them for better, for worse, whatever you think of them, they are not necessarily what you would want to say are hockey hits. They're more of intent to injure, intent to get, to get out of a game. You know, I look at the Kadri hit. Don't care what anybody says. He was going for the head. That was not even remotely an argument.
The third time he's done this.
You look at the Scheifele hit where you're not going to stop him from scoring. You could easily wrapped him up, Maybe a little bit of a scrum ensues, but you just let him know, I'm not trying to hit you. I just couldn't stop in time. Or I have to slam, or like Russ, you just have to say, fuck it, and just slam off the boards real hard because you're not going to stop in time. But instead, he decides to just use every piece of momentum he has and lay this guy out. But my question to you guys is, because it's the playoffs, because the most minor of suspension can legitimately alter the outcome of a team, because it's not an 82-game season, you have 7 games to get the amount of wins you need to advance. Whereas in the NHL, in an 82-game season, you lose a guy for a week or two, it'll hurt you, but you still have a lot of time to make up ground. Do you feel that if we were talking about the regular season and that Kadri hit happens or that Scheifele hit happens, these suspensions would have been bigger than they were?
I do. I'll jump in.
Okay, go. Yeah.
Yeah. Tom Wilson's 20 games that got reduced to 14 is immediately what comes to mind. And there's kind of been the actual unwritten rule, because this one's not codified in the rule book, that the ratio is 2-1. That whatever you get in the regular season, it'd be half as much in the playoffs. And then whatever you get in the playoffs, it would have been double in the regular season. I've only heard like reporters say this, but I've heard a lot of reporters perpetuate this. So Eric says they do not add up. I actually did add them up because I'm a degenerate. Over the last 2 years, we've had 37 suspensions in the regular season for an average of 2.9 games per suspension. We've had 9 suspensions in the playoffs for an average of 2.2. So it turns out it's really more like a 3-2 ratio, a 1.5-1 ratio rather than a 2-1. But yeah, it seems that the Department of Player Safety has very much said, you're not getting as many games in the playoffs because it hurts more.
But see, I want your opinion here, but isn't that kind of a way of saying like what should be a punishment for a team isn't really going to be a punishment for a team? It's going to be more like, here's your slap on the wrist. Let's get on with things. Because by your math, I believe Kadri got 8 games for that hit. It would have been a 16. It would have been 16-20 games in the regular season
for that hit. Right with that Tom Wilson suspension was.
Which, and I don't know what Scheifele got for the playoffs. 7. So you're talking about
4. Sorry, 4.
4.
I'm thinking.
So you're talking about 8-10 games if it's a regular season hit. So to me, something like this has to be something that's going to be detrimental to your team. If Scheifele does this, this has to be enforced for the future of, look, we're kind of setting this tone of, you can do this and you're going to squeak by getting away with it because we're not going to hurt you. We're not going to hurt the team enough. Whereas if it's Scheifele and he's out for 10 games in the playoffs, one, you don't know that you have 10 games to spare in the playoffs, but two, that's for that exact reason. Now you're going to think more on a hit. I get some hits are in the moment. Look, you're talking to a guy that in a roller rink league where you're not allowed to hit, spun around and Cronwall the guy for no other reason than I couldn't stop. Get over it. I apologize. I couldn't stop. Didn't get anything. Still the only one the only person who didn't get a penalty minute in that season after everybody said I was going to lead the team in penalty minutes. Just want to point that out to everyone. That was you. Yeah.
Yeah. Shocker.
Yeah, telling a ref to look at a rule book. Yeah, you definitely would get fined in the NHL, Jay. You 100% would.
I'm okay with that.
But I think it needs, Justin, I think it needs to be more of a detriment. It needs to hurt the team more because it's going to deter these kind of hits. It's going to make it so you have to think this out, because one hit could cost a Stanley Cup favorite a chance at a Stanley Cup. And you don't know how many years you have chemistry working.
Yeah, there's a weird middle ground there between, you know, do you suspend someone past the series length, which I don't know if that's even ever happened, or do you kind of reduce it just a touch? Like, I think, and then, you know, you have a lot of people dying on the hill of, like, I'm going to screw up the terminology that they use, but it's like, not like a freak play, but in the moment they both had these intentions, and when they both collided, that's why it caused that problem. And they say that to give, like, some relief to the aggressor, the hitter in the situation. I don't know. Give them 4 games and then ban them from all the preseason games. Like, just push
them a favor.
Push it to the side or something. I want to see good hockey. So I'm of the elk of yeah, we're just going to give you a little bit of a break here and there. Because guess what? If the Avs win tonight, we get Kadri game seven against Las Vegas. And I want that. I need that on my TV. So I want it, but I understand that it is lessening a discipline system, 100%.
So I guess let me put it this way as a question back to you guys. Missing a game in the regular season versus missing a game in a playoff, if we just go 1-1, haven't we just made the argument that it hurts more to miss that one game in the playoffs? That all things else being equal, it is more of a detriment to your team to miss that one game in the playoff. So yeah, where do we balance that out in units of pain? We're sports fans, right? So everything should be boiled down to units of pain. Does that mean two regular season games is as painful as one playoff game? Or do we have to say, no, it's 1-1 because you did the thing. And just because it's October doesn't mean you get to go 15 over the speed limit now. And we only give you the +5 ticket.
I think it should be exactly like that. Everything has that fair consequence. You look at these hits, and if I give you seven in the regular season, guess what? It's the exact same number in the playoffs. That's a series. Even if a series goes the full seven, you are out. So I think that's a good thing. One, no one wants to miss seven games in the regular season because those seven games could be the if you end up losing. You end up missing the playoffs by 0.5 games. Those games you miss could have been all the more. Whereas on the same side, no one wants to lose a single guy on a team in the Stanley Cup playoffs because it took every one of those guys to get to where you are. And losing someone, whether it is Kadri or whether it's someone like Connor McDavid, every one of these people has a role to fill. Losing them for seven is going to 100% kill you.
I'm fine with the 1-1 because it puts it on an even playing field. I'd also like to suspend anyone who said, "Well, keep your head up" on the Evans hit. They can just no longer be fans. Like they are permanently suspended because just a dumb take. But go 1-for-1 on those things.
Yeah, 100%. it's got to be 1-for-1. It doesn't make any sense for it to be anything but. It has to. The whole point of a suspension is a punishment that should affect the team, not just the person, especially in the playoffs. Because if it happens to this guy, like Tom Wilson, you start giving Tom Wilson playoff-ending suspensions, this team is either going to, one, cut him loose, or two, Alexander Ovechkin is going to call some of his KGB friends, and they're going to smack him around a little bit until he figures out how to stay on the ice and not be a detriment to this team. That's how I feel about it. Like Jay said, if we get a win tonight, you get to see game seven. By my math, that means that the Vegas Knights lead the Colorado Avalanche 3-2. And sure, guys, look, we all, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we all had Colorado getting, into the Stanley Cup. I think one or two of us might have actually had Colorado winning the Stanley Cup. So that being said, Russ, when you look at this series, what have you seen out of Vegas that's just got them that game ahead?
Well, once, and look, Robin Leonard's a good goalie, but once they realized, oh, Marc-Andre Fleury's been playing out of his mind, we'll keep playing him.
Yeah.
They've continued to dominate. It's frustrating because Colorado should be built to handle this better. Missing your second line center, as we just talked about, is probably a big factor in why this has happened, but Vegas is absolutely killing them on the number of high danger chances, the goals for percentage, just they're dominating. And it's Mark Stone mentioned it before, in what was it? Game, I think it was post game five. He goes, down 2-0. Man, that game should have been over in the second period. We all know that. But Marc-Andre Fleury pulled them out. And the dude's making Pittsburgh miserable with every single game. And I absolutely love it. But it's a deep team. And if you lose your second line center to doing something stupid, you're not going to be able to beat them. It is a razor thin margin of error anytime you play this Vegas team. And they walked themselves on the wrong line of it game one. If they didn't, series might already be over.
Yep. And that's the scary part because the Avs are the dominant favorite. Las Vegas reminds me a lot of Montreal. They're going to win in between the pipes, and that's how they're going to do it. Except for Vegas actually has depth on their team.
And scoring.
And it's scary. I mean, like, Stone isn't putting up points every single night, but when he needs to be clutch, he gets that game winner in overtime, and bam, look where we're at right now. I'm still on the Avs train, man. I think they're going to put it together and go. They're playing against Peter DeBoer, who's putting his players in great positions to win. I've seen some excellent coaching this playoffs year. So DeBoer's doing great for them.
Okay. And then, as mentioned earlier, I have a little bet going, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but we have the Islanders taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Jay, your thoughts on this matchup? Yeah, your cup's okay. There again. Islanders still going. Look, Russ and I have to eat it a little bit because we both just talked about how we were not anywhere near about this team, and they're still going. I mean, now they got to face the defending Stanley Cup champions, and the odds aren't favorites to be in the Stanley Cup again this year. So, Jay, your impressions of this matchup?
I love it. I love that Tampa's got to deal with this. The Islanders are just – they're blocking shots, and they're hitting people, and they're playing a boring Barry Trotz hockey game. But I asked myself in the beginning of the playoffs, can Barry Trotz have a game plan to just stifle top lines on other teams? And he's done it so far, and I absolutely love it. This is Barry Trotz's team. Barzell is exploding. I love that. I wanted the Wings to pick up Varlamov like 2 or 3 years ago when he was a free agent. Look what Varley's doing for them now. Like, they just took down Boston. I feel like that Boston series is going to be harder than the Tampa Bay series. So you might get the Islanders. You might see this Green Cup having Islanders on it for a little bit longer because they are doing some things. And I'm enjoying my my step team. We'll call it my step team. My step team. My adopted team.
And then lastly, Russ, because we are waiting on that final series to be decided, the one we just previously talked about. We already know one of the teams that's waiting, and that is the Montreal Canadiens, Live Le Habs, as I'm going right now, because they're making me some money. This is a team that I don't think anybody expected to see at this point. I think everybody was guessing this was going to be a quick 4 or 5 games for Toronto, and we were going to see Matthews and Mitch Marner and these guys just kind of roll on. Well, that didn't happen, and then we get to Winnipeg, and, well, that didn't happen. Montreal just decided, you know, let's keep playing some hockey. We don't got anything else to do right now. And now they are the Canadian team that, if Canada wants the Stanley Cup, better root for them Habs. Your thoughts, I guess, give me your thoughts on the Habs. We can get into which matchup suits them better. But your thoughts on this Habs team right now.
I don't know that it's more absurd that they've made it this far or that after starting later than everyone in the playoffs, they're the first team through to the conference finals.
That's the weird part. That's the weird part.
Yeah, right. Who had either of these things happening, let alone both of them? It's frustrating. And to take the empty platitude from every Pierre Maguire across the world, they're built for playoff hockey. What they actually mean by that, if we want to try and, you know, not just spew out empty words, they attack with depth, right? They don't really have a superstar line, but they will run 3 lines at you that are pretty consistent. And they have strong goaltending right now, which in a small sample size, that can carry you a lot of the way. They've also had the benefit of one of the team's star centers leaving the series after game one in both of their series right now. The Jets one probably doesn't go any different because, hey, it was a sweep, right? But Toronto absolutely goes the other way if Tavares is there the entire time. But I'm shitting on the Canadians too much. So I'll get back to it. They're a strong, deep team, right? And it's not that, hey, they like forecheck. It's they can, for the most part, shut down a top line. They do a great job of limiting shots share, and then they just beat you around the edges. And they stifle you, and they play to win a 3-2 game constantly. And when Carey Price is playing like Carey Price is right now, it's hard to lose that. So, hey, whether it's Vegas or Colorado, Montreal probably win because it's hockey.
Don't do that.
Then they'll go to the Stanley Cup. Yeah, we'll get Islanders, Canadians, and I'll hate it, and I'll go watch lacrosse apparently and give up hockey. But I'll get on board with it on one condition. If Cole Caulfield can score the Stanley Cup winning goal, because then maybe the takeaway is, hey, short players can be good too. And if that's what it takes, if we have to sacrifice these playoffs to the Montreal Canadiens for players under 5'9 to get a shot, fine, I guess. That'll probably be worth it.
Scott Gomez and I are very happy with your words right now.
If there's room for Jose Altuve in MLB, there's room for Cole Caulfield. Real quick, because we want to get to the NBA, Jay, which team is the bigger threat for Montreal? Vegas or Colorado?
Yes.
Good.
Both of them are.
That's fine. Listen,
I appreciate what the Habs are doing, but no one thought or expected them to make the conference finals this year, next year, or the year after. This is great experience for the rookies. Suzuki and Caulfield are getting wonderful education on what it's like to be this deep. But the answer is yes, it doesn't matter. This train has to stop, and it's going to stop at the conference finals. I don't – Las Habitants, go home. Thanks for coming over, but go across the border because we're done.
Rusty.
Vegas, because if anyone has shown in these playoffs that they can out Carey Price, it might just be Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, that was going to be my answer, too. The battle of the goalies is what I'm kind of hoping to see. I love Colorado. I'll root for Colorado as long as I can, but I think we're going to get a Game 7. We're going to get a Vegas win in Game 7. And, yeah, we're going to get the battle of the goalies in that series, and whichever guy can stand on their head the longest is going to, you know, going to give them a chance. Yeah, I like it. Moving over to the NBA, we've got a couple good series right now. We have the Nets taking on the Bucks. Nets lead that series 2-0. And a lot of this is being stated as fuel for Kyrie because Kyrie was compared to Giannis. And I'm going to say this right now. He's not listening, so I don't really care. There is no comparison. Giannis is better. Giannis is much better. You know how I know Giannis is better? Yeah, you have an NBA championship. That's great. You also have never played in an NBA playoff series where it was you and only you. You had Russell Westbrook, you had James Harden, then you jumped over to Golden State where you had the greatest backcourt of the last 20 years, and then you left to go to Brooklyn where now you have one of the best point guards of the last 10 years. You have a fellow teammate, and oh, by the way, you have Blake Griffin deciding he remembers how to play basketball. The translation
so
of that, Giannis is playing in the playoffs every year. No disrespect to Middleton. I like Middleton. He's a role player. He's a better than average role player. Giannis is doing this by himself every single time. Every single time. And you know who else had to do it by himself for about 10 years before it started turning? Michael Jordan. I'm not saying Giannis is Michael Jordan, but I'm saying that's the difference in greatness. Giannis is doing it by himself while everybody else is stacking the deck as best they can to win it. So, look, Kyrie, you're a generational talent, one of the greatest scorers we've ever seen. Until you do it by yourself, you can never compare yourself to Giannis because Giannis could have jumped ship a long time ago, could have gone to one of these super teams, could have gone and played in L.A., could have taken your place in Brooklyn, could have gone down to Dallas and played with Luka and had this super team of his own. But no, he said, give me max contract, max years, and let's just stay in Milwaukee and do this. So guess what? It's not even close. He's going to lose this series because he's fighting a super team. But at the end of the day, it's not even close. Giannis is better than Kevin Durant, and it's not that hard to prove. That being said, yeah, Brooklyn's going to win this series because they've just got too much talent, and it's too much for Giannis to have to take over Russ.
Yeah, I mean, I agree just quickly on the Giannis thing. Like, he's – Kevin Durant's good, and he's refound some of his youth. But again, Giannis is doing it by himself. Imagine what he could look like if he had the same supporting cast, the things that it would free him up to do. But I'm okay with the Nets going on because it takes out one more team that has ever won a championship. Everyone in the West – who's still alive has never won a title. In the East, three out of the four have. The Nets are the only one that haven't. So as long as we get Nets versus anyone in the West, we're going to see a first-time title.
That's cool.
I'm into that.
Now, where, like Russ, you said you agreed with me on this. Where do you find, look, these are two people that we've all agreed don't really have any business being on TV, but they're still on TV. Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith both said today that if Durant and Giannis were to switch teams, Milwaukee would win this series, no problem.
No. No. I'll say Durant might be, I mean, we haven't really seen it, but his skill set might lend itself to go alone better because he actually has a range game that he utilizes. Whereas Giannis, oh my God, could you imagine Giannis basically plug in where Blake Griffin is playing right now with Harden and Kyrie on the outside, pulling everyone out to the perimeter, and then he gets to slash in and absolutely dominate in the paint? Oh my God. No, it'd be a blowout worse than it is right now.
I agree. I agree. The other series in there is the Philadelphia 76ers taking on the villain Atlanta Hawks. And I love the villain Atlanta Hawks. I am all about it. That series is split 1-1. And to me, Jay, I don't know if you fall on this, but to me, I love Atlanta and it's fun, but this is turning into that series that I think is just going to get lost in the shuffle. You have Milwaukee and Brooklyn, big superstars. Out west, you have Utah taking on a Clippers team that is California's best chance at staying in the NBA Finals for the last 20 years. And you have the Suns, who are just playing so great right now. So it's almost like this is that series where someone's going to win that series, and you're going to look and go, oh, they're still in the playoffs. That's cool.
It's the Montreal Jets of the NBA. That's what it is. And on top of all that stuff that's been going on, you got LeBron James trying to change numbers in the middle of a postseason. So it's just like, just pile on to they're not irrelevant or not relevant right now.
I got to defend him on that one. He actually tried to change it a year ago. And Nike said no, because we have too much stock. If you'd like to buy up all the stock, then we're cool with the change. So he's actually had this application in for almost an entire year already. Oh, it's just coming in out now because their season's done.
That's what they did for NFL players if they wanted to change their numbers. You had to buy the remaining stock of your previous jersey.
So dumb.
Because Dalvin Cook wanted to change to like number 6.
Uh-huh.
But they told him you have to buy the stock, and it would have cost him like his contract to do it. So
how ridiculous is this? Is the tail wagging the dog? Like, your retail sale, why are you deciding what happens on the field? That's ridiculous.
Cute. That's cute.
Yeah.
So I've heard more. My point was, I've heard more about LeBron in number 8 or 6 or whatever he wants to do compared to that series or Atlanta.
We have the Utah Jazz taking on the LA Clippers. Utah leads that series 1-0 after a tremendous performance by that team the other night. And look, I think I'm going to go out on a limb here and throw out this prediction. I think Utah's going to win this one in 5. I just think these guys want to get this out of the way. They know whoever they see in the Western Conference Finals, and then if they make it to the NBA Finals, are going to be juggernauts. They need to get an LA team that is just, they're there because of the amount of talent they have. The problem is that talent just never seems to mesh together at the right time. You have Kawhi Leonard and you have Paul George, but Paul George, if I'm not mistaken, shot like 3 for 20 the other night. So it's just all these pieces are not lining up at the right time. They're there just on the fact that they have so much talent. It's hard for them not to be in the playoffs. But I think Donovan Mitchell is just playing so good right now that this is a Utah team that's going to be very, very hard to keep out of the next round. And then finally, we have the Denver Nuggets taking on the Phoenix Suns. Chris Paul and Devin Booker, the backcourt to be challenged. And on the other side, you have the Denver Nuggets with big man, love it, the Joker, MVP. Winning NBA MVP. And to me, what's even more insane about this is this Denver team is that good, and their best player isn't even playing. Jamal Murray is not on the court right now with injury. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. If you win MVP, you can make the argument Joker is the best player.
I'll make that argument.
That's fine. But I'm just saying the fact of the matter is their best scorer isn't even playing right now, and they're still very difficult to beat. I can only imagine what this team looks like if Jamal Murray's on the floor. I didn't mean any disrespect to the Joker. The guy is a beast down low. And then you add in Aaron Gordon, which, God, I wish he would have came to Detroit, but you add in Aaron Gordon to that team. This is a very, very tough team, but it's also it's the most lopsided matchup because you have one side where they have a really good backcourt, and the other side where it's more predominant on those bigs to keep this going. So it's really just, can the center and power forward keep pace with the shooters? I just think it's a interesting, fun matchup.
And so far, the answer is no, being down 2-0, which is probably a sign of the times for the NBA that the backcourt means more than ever. And if you're not dominating there, you're probably not dominating on the wins.
Yeah. Bold prediction. I think we see Brooklyn and Phoenix, which means Lob City, former Lob City teammates, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are going to meet in the finals, which means one of the Lob City guys is finally going to get a title. Fingers crossed it's Chris Paul, because they had it on ESPN today. I do believe Chris Paul is the greatest player to not have a title right now. He's the greatest player in the league that doesn't have a title. The guy is 6 foot and proved that you don't have to be 6 foot five to be an effective player in this league. He's one of the best point guards we've ever seen. So it'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Now, we kind of teased it a little bit earlier. It was totally my mistake, but we are going to do this real quick. I'm going to put quick calculations with the stat man up first, because Russ, you've already seen this. So how we're going to do this, I want you to give me the over under on how many you think he's going to hit on. I will give my over under. And then Jay, here's your bet. You have to pick which one of us you think got closer.
So I have seen the list. However, I hate spoilers, so I didn't read it. I read the first few. I've done my very best to forget them. So all I know is that there are 20 of them.
Yep, 20. Ooh. So over-under on the 20.
And I'm going to set the over-under at 11.5.
Okay. I should be better. No matter what I do, I should be better than 50%.
I'm actually that would going.
It's a little bit more than 50, but like 52, whatever the math is, that's fine. You can calculate.
I am actually going to say 9.5.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Now, you don't know what this is, Jay.
So of course I don't. I don't want to do 9.5 of 20. I want to do 20 of 20.
I don't think you want to do 20 of 20. I really don't.
I don't think. From what I do vaguely remember.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So, Jay, it's up to you. This is how dad are you? What are you taking? If you have to put that bet down, where are you going?
I have to put that bet down. Knowing me and this brain that has morphed into dad brain, I'm gonna go with Russ's number, but I'm gonna take the over against both of you guys. I'm gonna obliterate both of your scores. And I'll be as honest as possible.
Now, all I ask of this, you know what you have to hit, but all I ask is I want truthful here. Don't keep the count. Russ is gonna keep the tally here, but I want to.
You guys know me. You know me. If I'm bullshitting you, you're gonna say bullshit. So
I saw this the other day. This is how dad are you? These are expressions that you would say, and there's a scenario underneath to go along with them. So first one, I have to zoom in a little bit because these are very small.
How dad are you?
First statement Justin would make. How dad are you? Guess it's free then when a cashier has trouble scanning something.
So I need to say if I would say that or not, correct?
Would you say it or not? Yep.
Yeah, that's it. Yes, because Natasha and I we can go down a whole list of things that we've gotten for free by the cashier's mistake. So yes, that's a yes.
Okay. Next one. I know how much of a handyman this guy is, so I really think this one's going to hit. Found it when you point a stud finder at your chest.
I've done that. I bought a new one that's got a scale on the front. So it's like 4 or 5 lights that light up. It's like, yes. The answer's
all right. I'm already regretting my under here. This is terrible.
Next one. To 19.
Yeah. Next one. Looks like we'll have to amputate when a kid has a minor injury.
Nora has a boo-boo on her legs right now. I joke and say, all right, we're going to cut them off. Let's go to the hospital right now. We're going to get rid of them and get you new ones. So that's 3.
All right. Well, this one's 4 because I've actually heard him say this before. Let's rock and roll when it's time to leave.
That's just like normal work talk for me too. I use that expression at work. At 4.
He suddenly has Skechers and cargo shorts on.
I got a new pair of Skechers yesterday, bro. They're comfortable as hell.
Moving on to the next one.
I'll send you a picture.
Did you fall in when a kid's in the bathroom for too long?
Ooh, I don't think I've said that, but that's a good one. I have not said that.
I'm giving him fuel.
I haven't said that one.
Next up, what's the damage when you look at a bill?
Oh, God, yes. That's easy.
When you see a neighbor washing the car, can you do mine next?
No, I've never. I try to not be that guy when it comes outwardly. So that's a no.
I know you've done this one. After falling asleep on the couch, I was just resting my eyes.
Oh, 100%. That's six.
We're getting to the end of the first column. This is the last one. When seeing a friend in public, guess they'll let anyone in here.
That's a good one. I haven't said that. I'm going to use that at work too.
All right. So just so we know, after 10, Russ, where are we sitting?
We are at, how'd I miss one? I have 6 and 3.
6 and 3. Guess it's free then. Found it. Looks like we'll have to amputate. Let's rock and roll. Did you fall in? No. Oh, I did miss one. When someone mistakes left and right, no, your other right.
Oh God, yes. It's easy.
So 7.
All the time.
Yeah. Moving over to the other side now. When seeing traffic on the other side of the road, glad we're not going that way.
I said that today. 275 North was a shit show when I was going south.
I gave him too much credit.
Yeah, this is not working out well. After forgetting your keys, can't get very far without these.
Yep. Oh, God. I said it to our nanny the other day when I tried to go start my truck.
There you go.
9.
yeah, this is over. When driving past horses, look, horses.
No.
No. Okay.
Nope. That's where we draw the line.
Yes.
I very highly doubt we're going to go 0 for 7. So, when the door is open, I'm not paying to heat the whole neighborhood.
That is like the most, I've not said it, but that is like one of my favorite ones possible.
when carrying something heavy, it's not heavy, just awkward.
Now I moved the couch. I just moved a couch. We sold the couch the other day and I did not say that. No.
He's got to think. So therefore it's a no. In every town you're in, people don't know how to drive in this town.
I don't drive in other towns because it petrifies me. So that's a no.
Wow. We're actually doing all right here. Every time it rains, we needed this rain.
Yeah. My roses are finally popping, man.
Oh,
I finally
God.
Got some good rain. I got 3 beautiful roses in the front, and I got a peonies that's popping too. I needed that rain.
Ladies and gentlemen, Justin is in his early 30s going on 77.
How many do I have right now?
I think we just hit
10.
Yeah.
And Russ, you're at 11 and a half.
Yeah, with 3 to go.
I get 2 out of 3. Right.
After declining additional warranty protection, that's how they get you.
Easy. Yep. We just bought a new couch and it was $350 for the lifetime. That's no, go away. Nope.
When someone comes back inside because they forgot something, back already? How was it?
I'm missing out on some really good one-liners.
I'm gonna send this to you so you can write it down as a word of a day calendar.
On behalf of his family, please don't.
And last one, this is to hit the over. After tying something down, that's not going anywhere.
I own a truck. You want me to do it that one? Yes. The guy I sold the couch to had straps, and I said it to him when he tarped it.
Oh, gosh. That's a lovely 12. Yeah, that 9 was looking good for a minute there, but oh, wow, that really hit. So total was 12. Jay took the over. That's great. And that is How Dad Are You with Justin Marcus. And to answer that question, you are dad. Big time dad.
Dad with 3 D's.
Oh yeah. I don't know how I feel about that.
It's like thick with 3 C's. I'm dad with 3 D's.
You just said 3 D's and thick in the same sentence, and therefore I'm gonna have to ask that you take a minute, rethink life goals, and then let's work. Moving on to the final segment of the show. It's the same every week. Sergeant Salty's bet of the week. Justin, hit us with how you're gonna lose some money this week.
I'm this is the lowest of lows. If you go back and listen to it all, we've been riding this roller coaster together. I may be a good dad. I am a terrible gambler. Where you need to go simple, stupid. And that's what we're going to do this week. And there's no preface. There's no, I feel like this, I feel like that. This is just straight easy money, which doesn't exist. So Eric and Russ, Eric, you are 1-4. Russ, you are 2-3. We've only had 3 successful cash-in moments. Whoop-de-doo. And one of them overlaps. So it's really only 2 successful bets that I've picked. I think both of these could win. And they're going to lose. So we have Colorado to win game 6 plus 118. And very simply put, I do not understand why they are gamble-wise considered to be a dog in a way, because there's some juice on the points. But if Brooklyn Nets to win is plus 135, they're giving you more money on your money for the Nets to win game 3 against the Bucks. That should be like, duh. So you've got Colorado to win to make it game 7, or you got Brooklyn to win to take a 3-0 lead on that series. One of these should win, and this should propel us in the right direction, because damn it, we need a W.
No. Not one of these should win. Both of these should win because I have them both in a parlay to win. So I am going to break the rules here. I'm going to be Justin, and I'm going to say both.
Ooh, I like this. Russ, I'll give you the same opportunity.
Which, by the way, yes, I did find it absurd, though, that they are giving Brooklyn the plus in that series, even though they should be the odds-on favorite.
So, trying to look it up. Okay, no, it is in Vegas. Ooh, game 6 in Vegas. No, I got to take the Nets, and only the Nets, because like you guys have said, they shouldn't be the underdog. An implied odds of 42.7%. I get that you want to say that Giannis doesn't get swept, but dude, I'm not putting 60% likelihood that he can will his team to a win. Where's Colorado? 46% implied. No, give me the Nets.
So then, in all fairness, can I also, Russ, entertain you with Vegas to win? Then,
what's if the Eric's going to double Vegas to win?
I can pull it up, but if Eric's going to double dip in the well, because if they'll both hit, I'll give him both points because he's down in the series. Because I love a good dogfight. But if you want to take Vegas to take the W there, I'll give you Vegas, and right now they are sitting at -136. Not that we're cashing in points here, but they're favored 136.
136, 57. Oof. You know what? Yeah. Yeah. Give me Vegas and the Nets.
All right. Well, if that happens, Russ will be stat man on another podcast next week, because that'll mean my parlay fell apart, and that'll be money. So we'll have to have a conversation.
I love this. And if I had any money, I would bet both, but I can't. I have no money.
Well, look at it this way. Like I said, I have a parlay, which means I bet both. So I'll keep us afloat for a little while. I've had a little bit of a streak going with picking the winners. I have Dustin Johnson this week. He's tied for the lead right now, so we'll see what happens there. Got it. I cannot get over how dad a 30-year-old is, because those are like some 55, 60-year-old comments, and this guy's doing it with ease.
Point of contention, if we're going to have Natasha play this test, I think she's more dead than I am. Natasha has said more dead things, so Natasha would be more dead than me.
Well, if Natasha is nearby, we can see how dead she is. Well,
she's very dead. She's very dead.
We will have to find that. You know what? Next week's show, we will bring back how dad are you? And we will get Natasha on to see how dad she is. No one gets to tell Natasha what the what Justin's number was. I want to see how close they get. If they both hit 12, I'm going to be very scared. So we'll see what happens there. That's another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. My thanks to Triple D Dad, Justin Marcus.
That's what I'm here for. I'll try to bring this water bottle more often. I have a fun game to play with that now too.
Oh God. And look, he is very dad, and it is very scary. The stat man calculating it all, making us sound a lot smarter than we really are.
Hey, I'm sorry I'm not dad to the bone like some of us are. But I tried and I had fun. So we'll see what next week brings.
Absolutely. And like always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it.